This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale at Drive.
Minutes past six, a very good evening to you. You're listening to Ian Dale at Drive. Well, it's Trump and May all the way for the next hour. We'll be taking more of your calls on what you think Theresa May should be saying to Donald Trump at the moment. She's in the Oval Office. We think their meeting is overrunning. I did predict this a little bit earlier. Not quite sure to what extent, possibly up to half an hour, which will be, from her point of view, a good thing, because I suppose it shows they've got a lot to talk about, that they've got on. We'll see the body language at the press conference. So we'll hear from both of them sometime in the next 20-25 minutes. We'll bring that to you live here on LBC. Let's get the very latest from Washington with our US correspondent, Simon Marks. Any word on the timing, Simon?
Well, they are moving the press into the room even as I speak, Ian. There's been an awful lot of fussing over the last half an hour with the flags that are behind the podium where Theresa May and Donald Trump will be standing. But I think they finally satisfied themselves.
Well,
that
I hope
the flags
got the union flag the right way up.
Well, I haven't seen. I'll have to see. We're only seeing a close-up at the moment, but one can only hope that they have the flags sufficiently ruffled. The press have been taken in. It will amuse you to discover that American journalists have been told they must sit on the right and the British will be sitting on the left. So that is taking place even as we speak. Hard to know exactly how far away this press conference is going to be. Let me just bring you up to date on a couple of things that we've learnt in the last hour since I last spoke to you. We now know that before Theresa May arrived at the White House, Donald Trump engaged in an hour-long telephone call with the President of Mexico, Enrique Peña Nieto. And I suspect that the American press will be as interested to find out from Donald Trump how that conversation went, given that the Mexican president yesterday cancelled his visit to the White House, which was due to take place next week, and Donald Trump seemed to be threatening Mexico with a trade war. The American journalists on the right of that room at the White House may be as interested in asking Donald Trump about that conversation as they are about the conversation that he is presumably still having in the Oval Office with Theresa May. When they walked into the Oval Office, Donald Trump met Theresa May on the portico of the White House, escorted her personally to the Oval Office, and when they walked in, there was a bit of small talk about the small statue of Churchill.
Simon, just let me interrupt you a second. Stay with us, if you would. I want to cross live to the White House now and talk to Tim Shipman, political editor of the Sunday Times. He's in the room where the press conference is being held. Any word on timing, Tim?
Well, I think we're running a little bit late, but the chiefs of staff have taken their seats, which normally means that we're not far away. But people are still doing their pieces to camera. Lots of impressive-looking American people with an inch of makeup, and that's just the men.
Well, what's the atmosphere like there? I imagine among the British press contingent, there's a real sense of anticipation.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't think we've seen anything this potentially interesting in a leader press conference since Gordon Brown was being snubbed by Barack Obama a few years ago. There's a very large pack travelling with the Prime Minister, about 50 of us, which is bigger than usual. And the room here in the East Wing is absolutely heaving. We've got probably 400 or 500 people in here. And it shows there's a great deal of interest from the Americans as well. I'm counting probably 20 cameras in here at the moment.
Looking at the pictures from the Oval Office earlier when they first met, it was all a bit formal, all a little bit stiff, wasn't it?
Yeah, it looks. These are not two people who are natural sort of bedfellows, as it were. And I think what's going to be interesting about the press conference is to see whether, you know, we get a little bit more of a feel for how these two people are interacting together. We talk a lot about the special relationship, and a lot of that is based on mutual defence and security interests and history. But the only times it really properly functions are when there's some chemistry between the two leaders as well. And it's not obvious that Theresa May and Donald Trump are going to get on, but they've both got a lot of reasons for trying to do so. So we'll be looking at every nuance of the body language, and a couple of my colleagues will have questions. We'll try and extract a little bit of information about, you know, what they've been talking about.
Now, we heard on the way on the plane over, which you were on the plane with the Prime Minister, I think, that she told you all that, well, opposites can attract. Slightly saucy comment.
Well, there's a slightly coquettish side to the Prime Minister when she wants to have one. I remember a comment she made in the chamber about Peter Bone's wife during Prime Minister's questions, and he talked about their anniversary, and she made some crack about how she hoped Mrs. Bone was performing her natural duties to mark the anniversary. So she's not above what you might call a sort of sexual wisecrack, but we're all slightly surprised by the tone that she adopted. But as you say, when looking at the pictures earlier, it didn't look like they were about to jump into bed together, certainly.
Who will have been in that meeting with the Prime Minister and Donald Trump, or was it just the two of them? I think Steve Bannon, I've just seen, the President's chief advisor, I've seen him walking into the room where you are. Would he have been there?
My understanding is that he wasn't in the main sort of part of the talks. There were, unless he was there as a sort of semi-chief of staff, both of Theresa May's chiefs of staff were there. Runce Priebus, who is Trump's chief of staff, was there. I think they both had their national security advisers, and they both had other kind of senior cabinet positions. But we're talking a fairly small number of people, four or five on each side. But my understanding is that they didn't have any time one-on-one, which is a little bit curious, given that so much of this is about getting some bonding between the two leaders. I don't think Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan were constantly surrounded by people. They had a bit of time ad dur as well.
But they'll have that over lunch, won't they, after the press conference? I assume they will sit next to each other.
Yes, I would think so. That's the plan. But sometimes, you know, but people who've been a leader always say that, you know, you can never really understand what it's like unless you've been one yourself. And there's a great bonding between world leaders. David Cameron always talked about this when he went to Brussels. And when you throw all the staff out of the room, you can have a situation where people can sort of sit around and pour out their hearts and solve each other's problems. And they're just coming in now. And so I think I should probably leave you to it. And you can take the live feed.
Tim, thank you very much indeed. That's Tim Shipman, political editor of the Sunday Times. Simon Marks is still with us. We're waiting to get the pictures and the live feed of Theresa May and Donald Trump. Here they are, just walking onto the podium, standing about 6 feet away from each other in front of their respective flags. Donald Trump, Theresa May, let's cross live to Washington now, to the White House.
Theresa May here for our first official visit from a foreign leader. This is our first visit, so great honor. The special relationship between our two countries has been one of the great forces in history for justice and for peace. And by the way, my mother was born in Scotland, Stornoway, which is Sirius Scotland. Today, the United States renews our deep bond with Britain, military, financial, cultural, and political. We have one of the great bonds. We pledge our lasting support to this most special relationship. Together, America and the United Kingdom are a beacon for prosperity and the rule of law. That is why the United States respects the sovereignty of the British people and their right of self-determination. A free and independent Britain is a blessing to the world, and our relationship has never been stronger. Both America and Britain understand that governments must be responsive to everyday working people, that governments must represent their own citizens. Madam Prime Minister, we look forward to working closely with you as we strengthen our mutual ties in commerce, business, and foreign affairs. Great days lie ahead for our two peoples and our two countries. On behalf of our nation, I thank you for joining us here today. It's a really great honor. Thank you very much. Here today, it's a really great honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. And can I start by saying that I'm so pleased that I've been able to be here today, and thank you for inviting me so soon after your inauguration. And I'm delighted to be able to congratulate you on what was a stunning election victory. And as you say, the invitation is an indication of the strength and importance of the special relationship that exists between our two countries, a relationship based on the bonds of history, of family, kinship, and common interests. And in a further sign of the importance of that relationship, I have today been able to convey Her Majesty the Queen's hope that President Trump and the First Lady would pay a state visit to the United Kingdom later this year, and I'm delighted that the President has accepted that invitation. Now, today we're discussing a number of topics, and there's much on which we agree. The President has mentioned foreign policy. We're discussing how we can work even more closely together in order to take on and defeat Daesh and the ideology of Islamist extremism wherever it's found. Our two nations are already leading efforts to face up to this challenge, and we're making progress with Daesh losing territory and fighters, but we need to redouble our efforts. And today we're discussing how we can do this by deepening intelligence and security cooperation, and critically by stepping up our efforts to counter Daesh in cyberspace. Because we know we will not eradicate this threat until we defeat the idea, the ideology that lies behind it. Our talks will be continuing later. I'm sure we'll discuss other topics, Syria and Russia. On defence and security cooperation, we're united in our recognition of NATO as the bulwark of our collective defence. And today, we've reaffirmed our unshakable commitment to this alliance. Mr. President, I think you said, you confirmed that you're 100% behind NATO. But we're also discussing the importance of NATO continuing to ensure it is as equipped to fight terrorism and cyber warfare as it is to fight more conventional forms of war. And I've agreed to continue my efforts to encourage my fellow European leaders to deliver on their commitments to spend 2% of their GDP on defence so that the burden is more fairly shared. It's only by investing properly in our defence that we can ensure we're properly equipped to face our shared challenges together. And finally, the President and I have mentioned future economic cooperation and trade. Trade between our two countries is already worth over £150 billion a year. The US is the single biggest source of inward investment to the UK, and together we've around $1 trillion invested in each other's economies. And the UK-US defence relationship is the broadest, deepest and most advanced of any two countries, sharing military hardware and expertise. And I think the President and I are ambitious to build on this relationship in order to grow our respective economies, provide the high-skilled, high-paid jobs of the future for working people across America and across the UK. And so we are discussing how we can establish a trade negotiation agreement, take forward immediate high-level talks, lay the groundwork for a UK-US trade agreement, and identify the practical steps we can take now in order to enable companies in both countries to trade and do business with one another more easily. And I'm convinced that a trade deal between the US and the UK is in the national interest of both countries and will cement the crucial relationship that exists between us, particularly as the UK leaves the European Union and reaches out to the world. Today's talks, I think, are a significant moment for President Trump and I to build our relationship, and I look forward to continuing to work with you as we deliver on the promises of freedom and prosperity for all the people of our respective countries. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's very nicely stated. Steve Holland. Where's Steve? Steve, yes.
Thank you. You're going to be speaking tomorrow with the Russian president. Yes. What message would you like to convey to him? How close are you to lifting some of the sanctions imposed on Russia over its Ukraine incursion? What would you expect in return? And Prime Minister May, do you foresee any changes in British attitudes towards sanctions on Russia?
Well, I hear a call was set up, Steve, and we'll see what happens. As far as the sanctions, very early to be talking about that. But we look to have a great relationship with all countries, ideally. That won't necessarily happen. Unfortunately, probably won't happen with many countries. But if we can have, as we do with Prime Minister May and the relationship that we've all developed, and even in the short relationship that we've just developed, just by being with each other, we're going to have lunch, and we've really had some very interesting talks and very productive talks. But if we can have a great relationship with Russia, and with China, and with all countries, I'm all for that. That would be a tremendous asset. No guarantees, but if we can, that would be a positive, not a negative. Okay?
We have, as far as the UK is concerned on sanctions for Russia in relation to their activities in the Ukraine, we have been very clear that we want to see the Minsk agreement fully implemented. We believe the sanctions should continue until we see that Minsk agreement fully implemented, and we've been continuing to argue that inside the European Union. Okay. Laura?
Thank you very much, Prime Minister. Laura Kunzberg, BBC News. Prime Minister, you've talked about where you agree, but you have also said you would be frank where you disagree with the President. Can you tell us where in our talks you did disagree, and do you think that the President listened to what you had to say? And, Mr. President, you say... We'll see what she says. Mr. President, you've said before that torture works. You've praised Russia. You've said you want to ban some Muslims from coming to America. You've suggested there should be punishment for abortion. For many people in Britain, those sound like alarming beliefs. What do you say to our viewers at home who are worried about some of your views and worried about you becoming the leader of the free world?
This was your choice of a question.
There goes that relationship.
On the issue that you raised with me, Laura, can I confirm that the President, I've been listening to the President and the President has been listening to me. That's the point of having a conversation and a dialogue. And we have been discussing a number of topics. We'll carry on after this press conference, meeting and discussing a number of other topics. And there will be times when we disagree and issues on which we disagree. The point of the special relationship is that we are able to have that open and frank discussion so that we are able to make that clear when it happens. But I'm clear also that there are many issues on which the United Kingdom and the United States stand alongside one another, many issues on which we agree. And I think, as I said yesterday in my speech, that we are at a moment now when we can build an even stronger special relationship, which will be in the interest not just of the UK and the United States, but actually in the interests of the wider world as well.
Very good. We have a great general who has just been appointed Secretary of Defense, General James Mattis. And he has stated publicly that he does not necessarily believe in torture or waterboarding or however you want to define it. Enhanced interrogation, I guess, would be a word that a lot of people would like to use. I don't necessarily agree, but I would tell you that he will override because I'm giving him that power. He's an expert. He's highly respected. He's the general's general. Got through the Senate very, very quickly, which in this country is not easy, I will tell you. And so I'm going to rely on him. I happen to feel that it does work. I've been open about that for a long period of time. But I am going with our leaders, and we're going to... We're going to win with or without, but I do disagree. As far as, again, Putin and Russia, I don't say good, bad, or indifferent. I don't know the gentleman. I hope we have a fantastic relationship. That's possible, and it's also possible that we won't. We will see what happens. I will be representing the American people very, very strongly, very forcefully, and if we have a great relationship with Russia and other countries, and if we go after ISIS together, which has to be stopped, that's an evil that has to be stopped, I will consider that a good thing, not a bad thing. How the relationship works out, I won't be able to tell you that later. I've had many times where I thought I'd get along with people, and I don't like them at all. And I've had some where I didn't think I was going to have much of a relationship, and it turned out to be a great relationship. So, Teresa, we never know about those things, do we? But I will tell you one thing. I'll be representing the American people very strongly. Thank you. How about John Roberts, Fox?
Mr. President, thank you so much, Madam Prime Minister. It's my understanding, Mr. President, that you had an hour-long phone call this morning with President Enrique Peña Nieto of Mexico. Could we get an update on where the relationship is? Further to that, what do you say to your critics who claim that you have already soured a relationship with a very important U.S. ally? And, Madam Prime Minister, if I may ask you as well, are you concerned about the state of relations between the United States and Mexico? Sir?
Well, I think the Prime Minister, first of all, has other things that she's much more worried about than Mexico and the United States relationship. But I will say that we had a very good call. I have been very strong on Mexico. I have great respect for Mexico. I love the Mexican people. I work with the Mexican people all the time. Great relationships. But as you know, Mexico, with the United States, has out-negotiated us and beat us to a pulp through our past leaders. They've made us look foolish. We have a trade deficit of $60 billion with Mexico. On top of that, the border is soft and weak. Drugs are pouring in. And I'm not going to let that happen. And General Kelly is going to do a fantastic job at Homeland Security. As you know, we swore him in yesterday. We have a really, I think, a very good relationship, the President and I. And we had a talk that lasted for about an hour this morning. And we are going to be working on a fair relationship and a new relationship. But the United States cannot continue to lose vast amounts of business, vast amounts of companies, and millions of people losing their jobs. That won't happen with me. We're no longer going to be the country that doesn't know what it's doing. And so we are going to renegotiate our trade deals, and we're going to renegotiate other aspects of our relationship with Mexico. And in the end, I think it'll be good for both countries. But it was a very, very friendly call. I think you'll hear that from the President, and I think you'll hear that from the people of Mexico that really represent him and represent him very well. And I look forward to, over the coming months, we'll be negotiating, and we'll see what happens. But I'm representing the people of the United States, and I'm going to represent them as somebody should represent them, not how they've been represented in the past, where we lose to every single country.
As the President himself has said, the relationship of the United States with Mexico is a matter for the United States and Mexico. Tom.
Mr. President, you said you'd help us with a Brexit trade deal. You said you'd help us with a Brexit trade deal. You said you'd stand by us with NATO. But how can the British Prime Minister believe you? Because you have been known in the past to change your position on things. And also, Mayor, that's a question to both of you. People are fascinated to know how you're going to get on with each other. You're so different. The hardworking daughter of a vicar, the brash TV extrovert. Have you found anything in common personally yet?
Actually, I'm not as brash as you might think. and I can tell you that I think we're going to get along very well. You know, it's interesting because I am a people person. I think you are also, Teresa. And I can often tell how I get along with somebody very early, and I believe we're going to have a fantastic relationship. Brexit, and I really don't change my position very much. If you go back and you look, my position on trade has been solid for many, many years, since I was a very young person, talking about how we were getting ripped off by the rest of the world. And I never knew I'd be in this position where we can actually do something about it. But we will be talking to your folks about Brexit. Brexit was an example of what was to come. And I happened to be in Scotland at Turnberry cutting a ribbon when Brexit happened. And we had a vast amount of press there. And I said, Brexit, this was the day before, you probably remember, I said, Brexit is going to happen. And I was scorned in the press for making that prediction. I was scorned. And I said, I believe it's going to happen because people want to know who's coming into their country and they want to control their own trade and various other things. And lo and behold, the following day, it happened. And the odds weren't looking good for me when I made that statement because, as you know, everybody thought it was not going to happen. I think Brexit's going to be a wonderful thing for your country. I think when it irons out, you're going to have your own identity. And you're going to have the people that you want in your country, and you're going to be able to make free trade deals without having somebody watching you and what you're doing. And I had a very bad experience. I had something when I was in my other world. I have something in another country. And getting the approvals from Europe was very, very tough. Getting the approvals from the country was fast, easy, and efficient. Getting the approvals from
the group, I call them the consortium, was very, very tough. But I thought Brexit, I think it'll go down, that it will end up being a fantastic thing for the United Kingdom. I think in the end, it will be a tremendous asset, not a tremendous liability. Okay?
And just on the question you asked me, Tom, I mean, I think as the president himself has said, I think we have already struck up a good relationship. But you asked what we had in common. I think if you look at the approach that we're both taking, I think one of the things we have in common is that we want to put the interests of ordinary working people right up there, centre stage. Those people who, they're working all the hours, they're doing their best for their families, and sometimes they just feel the odds are stacked against them. And it's that interest in ensuring that what we do, that the economies, our economies and our governments actually work for ordinary working people, work for everyone in our countries. I think we both share that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Well, it ended rather abruptly, didn't it? It lasted, what, about 20 minutes? I thought quite an interesting dynamic there. It was relatively formal. Interestingly, sometimes sort of the reaction of some of our listeners is probably right more on the money than my reaction. Let me read you this tweet from Paul, who says, "The fact that the first time we hear a more restrained Trump is after the meeting with Theresa May is huge." I think he's got a really good point there, because we did see a little bit of a different side to Donald Trump. Yes, there was the occasional bit of brashness there. Much more calm and restrained than the Donald Trump that we've seen in recent days making all of these sort of announcements. So I wonder what you made of that. We'll come to your calls in a moment. 0345 6060 973. Two of the main points that I take from that is that there will be a state visit from Donald Trump and Mrs. Trump later in the year. And also, Theresa May was very, very keen to point out that the president was 100% behind NATO. She looked over to him for affirmation when she said that. Very interesting questions from Laura Koonsberg there. Slightly slapped down by Donald Trump, but I think that was quite interesting. So let's get your reaction to what you heard. Was that a different Donald Trump that you heard there? Did we hear enough about this future trade deal? Do you think Theresa May got enough from Donald Trump on that? 0345 6060 973. Simon Marks is still with us, LBC's US correspondent. Your analysis, Simon.
Well, that was fascinating, Ian. I think Donald Trump looked very nervous, to be honest. I'm not sure that he was entirely comfortable in the setting, and there were times during the press conference where he'd glance over to Theresa May and she seemed to be almost sort of nodding and egging him on to kind of relax and get into the role. There's quite a lot of news in there, though. First of all, interesting that it doesn't seem as though during the Oval Office meeting they discussed Syria and Russia. She said she hoped that they would have a chance to talk about them over lunch, but she made it absolutely apparent that she is sticking by British sanctions against Vladimir Putin in the Kremlin, even if Donald Trump ultimately decides to lift his sanctions, the US sanctions in place against Russia. Remember, he's going to be talking to Vladimir Putin this weekend. She really tried to force him in a way to go on the record and express what he had apparently said to her in the Oval Office, that he was 100% behind NATO. He didn't articulate it himself in that news conference, but he didn't disagree with her when she said, "You said it during the course of our meeting." Yeah. That is a big shift, because Donald Trump, of course, has argued previously that NATO was obsolete. On the issue of the use of torture, an astonishing admission from Donald Trump, or announcement from Donald Trump. He believes in the use of torture. His Defense Secretary General James Mattis doesn't, but he's going to allow his Defense Secretary James Mattis to override him on the issue, which certainly takes us down a different avenue of governmental practice here in the United States. Usually the buck stops at the president's desk, but on this particular issue, apparently for now at least, it stops at the desk of General James Mattis. Who knows what happens if General James Mattis is at any point indisposed or is no longer America's Defense Secretary. There was also a curious turn of phrase that Donald Trump used right at the start. of this press conference, in which he spoke of America's respect for, or his respect for, Britain's sovereignty and self-determination, Britain's right to sovereignty and self-determination. It struck me as a slightly curious thing to say, because I wasn't aware that anybody had raised the issue of whether Britain's sovereignty and self-determination was at any risk from the United States. Not entirely clear why that was front of mind.
He didn't make it clear
that he was tying it to Brexit. It came at a very early stage of that press conference. But look, lots of meat in there. They're going to continue their conversations over lunch at the White House, and I'm sure we'll get a much more detailed readout from British officials and from American officials once it's all over. One other brief point to make. There is another major event taking place here in Washington today, and that is the March for Life. Vice President Mike Pence and the president's top advisor, Kellyanne Conway, were not in the Oval Office for this meeting with Theresa May. They've been attending the March for Life. So that gives you a sense of some of the dynamics that are taking place behind the scenes at the White House today.
Simon, thank you very much indeed. That's Simon Marks, our US correspondent. Well, I think this was an interesting test for Theresa May. And I have to say, from that performance there, I thought she passed with flying colours. This is her most important meeting with a foreign leader. Yeah, it can't have been an easy thing for her to sort of fly all the way to America thinking, oh my God, I've got to meet Donald Trump. What's he going to be like? Am I going to get on with him? I thought she was calmness personified. She was assured. She said some relatively interesting things, particularly the NATO comments. She did put him on the spot there.